Blog Talk Radio.
Brothers and sisters, I don't know what this world is coming to.
Jeff Van Gundy.
Iguodala to inbound. Shumpert trying to stay with Curry. Catches. One dribble, steps back. Puts up a three. Won't go. Rebound tip taken by Spades. Final second. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions. Cleveland's long sports nightmare has ended. The drought is over. 52 years. Time to celebrate a title. And the emotions for LeBron James, who delivers on his promise to come home and bring a championship to his beloved hometown. And of course, the disappointment, the stunning disappointment at the other end. James Jones's longtime teammate, been with him for all six of these consecutive finals. And an emotional Tyronn Lue. What a scene, an emotional scene for LeBron James. These diehard fans, so passionate. They so love their team. Decades of heartbreak of being teased, but it never diminished their passion. And now they're rewarded with an NBA championship. As always, the terrific sportsmanship. So much more to come here from Oracle Arena as LeBron James and the Cavaliers win the NBA championship. And a celebration just underway in the city of Cleveland. Let's go to Doris.
Mike, overcome with emotion is exactly how I would describe LeBron's reaction as he shares a hug with Kyrie. We'll get in a minute, but he is still crying tears of joy. LeBron.
I'm sorry, Doris.
No worries, Kyrie. LeBron, as soon as that buzzer sounded, your emotions let loose. Can you describe what you're feeling right now?
I set out a goal 2 years when I came back to bring a championship to the city. I gave everything that I had. I put my heart, my blood, my sweat, my tears to this game, and against all odds, I don't know why we want to take the hardest road. I don't know why the man above gives me the hardest road, but it's nothing the man above don't put you in situations that you can't handle. And I just kept that same positive attitude, like, instead of saying, why me, they're saying this is what he want me to do. And Cleveland, this is for you. Oh.
All right. Well, you just heard from the man. Hey, if it's anybody out there that still believes that LeBron James is one of the best players of all time, then I think you might have a serious issue as far as your basketball knowledge. I mean, this man, he basically led his team back from a 3-1 deficit to win the NBA Finals. Something that's never been done before. And this man did it. He set out a goal to win the championship for his hometown city, and the man did it. I mean, so, you know, none but much props to LeBron. And I remember when I used to watch LeBron at St. Vincent St. Mary's High School, where he won three state championships. He was also a McDonald's All-American, the number one recruit in his high school class. Every college in the country wanted him, especially Ohio State, who he still has an affiliation with till this day. In 2003, his hometown, the Cleveland Cavaliers, drafted him with the number one selection. His first 7 years would have plenty of success, but also plenty of failure. LeBron did the best of what he had. I mean, he had a limited amount of talent around him. But in 2007, he was one of the youngest players to ever lead a team to the NBA Finals. And this was an average team. I mean, I'm talking about a team that had players like Larry Hughes, Boobie Gibson, Anderson Varejao, Jonas Ilgauskas. I mean, really, players is not that great. But he led them to the finals. You know, unfortunately, they got swept by the San Antonio Spurs. And he would follow up the next couple of years with more heartbreak. And then that's when the decision came. And this is where he broke the hearts of all Ohioans. You know, when he had that, they felt it the worst, that he would take his talents to South Beach. And he would win a couple of titles. He would join Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. All the while, his heart was still in Cleveland. After the Spurs demolished Miami 4-1 in the 2014 finals, this happened on October 30th, 2014.
Noon. This building is jammed.
Cavalier fans
on their feet.
Are
get it going. It's
you
of Cavs basketball. Next, they are led by rookie head coach Derek Fisher. Shane Larkin gets the start of playing guard in the app. Oh, they call it their own. Iman Shumpert and then of course the Cavs get the new second leading scorer in the NBA.
And that was LeBron's triumphant return back to Cleveland. The Cavs would have a great season, by making it to the NBA Finals in his first year back. Unfortunately, they would lose to the Golden State Warriors 4-2. Now, everything for LeBron has come full circle. The 2015-16 season saw the Cavs dominate the Eastern Conference again and return to the 2016 NBA Finals for a rematch with the Golden State Warriors. James would lead the Cavs to a historic NBA Finals series win, bringing the city of Cleveland their first professional sports championship since 1964. Cleveland, the curse is now lifted.
Hi, sports fans. Don't you love to see young people engaged in a good book? Then it's a must that you check out my website for my newly released title, A Different Color. You will find a list of other engaging books for youth ages 12 through 18 as well. My books are only $10, and they are guaranteed. So if that special young person in your life is not engaged, you will get your money back. So quit stalling and check me out at www.yireadpublishing.com. That's www.yireadpublishing.com. I'm KC Taylor, and together we make a difference in the lives of our youth.
Back to Sports Chat with T. Wash. We're going to get into these NBA Finals. What's going on in Sports Chat with T. Wash? Who's calling?
This is Charles.
Hey, what's going on, Charles? What you got for me today, buddy?
Man, I just want to give out kudos to LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, man. That was a heck of a series. 3-1 deficit, come back, win the championship. But also to the people of Cleveland. So championship stars, man. It was just good to see them celebrate a championship.
Yeah, it was, man. I was real happy for them. I mean, think about it. I mean, they've been suffering for years and years. I mean, I brought this up in my show before. You know, the closest they've been is with the 97 Cleveland Indians, you know, when they lost Game 7 to the Florida Marlins off a Craig Council base hit off of Jose Mesa, their closer. I mean, they were that close to the championship, and that was like the best team they ever had. I mean, that was like one of the greatest teams ever. Like at every position, they were stacked. So they really believe it was that year that they would win. I mean, but yeah, they haven't won anything since Jim Brown, 1964. It's been 52 years. So you got to feel happy for Cleveland. I mean, I'm not a Cleveland Cavalier fan, but hey, I feel happy just for the city. And I feel happy for LeBron, too, because everyone tends to hate on him, you know. But like I said, in my monologue, there's no reason for you to hate on him now. There's nothing you can say. The man brought his team back from a 3-1 deficit to win an NBA Finals, something that's never been done, Charles.
I hear you, man. And that alone, man, we got to give him his props, man. We got to give him his props. He did his thing, man.
Definitely.
And I'm gonna let you go, man. But I want to ask you. Have you heard that Derrick Rose got traded today, man?
Yeah, I was gonna touch on that. I just found out. I'm gonna touch on it, but yeah, I heard.
All right.
All right. Thanks for calling, Charles.
All right, man.
All right. Bye. What's going on in the sports chat with your boy T-Wash? Who's calling?
Hey, this is Gary. What's going on, T-Wash?
Not much. What's going on, Gary?
Not much, man. I wanted to just harp in on LeBron real quick. I had him on my Mount Rushmore before this finals win, and, you know, he might be two now behind the GOAT. But I just wanted to touch bases with how legendary his finals play was. I mean, to lead both teams in all statistical categories, points, rebounds, assists, and everything. I mean, that's one of the greatest finals performances I've ever seen. And I want to get on, because people were getting on him like last year and early this year about his play, about not, I don't want to say having that killer instinct, but just kind of going at his own pace. And I saw what he was doing. Real people that watch the NBA that understand the NBA know what he was doing. He was getting his teammates on the same page. He was getting them making sure they had that edge and make sure they had that fire. So when he starts to play like LeBron can play, it'll be a perfect match. And I think that that's exactly what happened. You look at a guy like Kyrie Irving. Of course, he was an all-star, so, you know, we knew he could ball, but he had a legendary finals as well. And I think that's going to catapult him going forward as a top three point guard, as a top superstar in this league. And I just wanted to harp in a little bit as far as the decision a couple of years ago, which saw LeBron go to Miami. Of course, a lot of people, you know, gave him slack for that. But it could be argued that that's the best thing to ever happen to Cleveland, because he stayed with Cleveland for a number of years, and they put a couple of pieces around him to try to get a championship. But nobody was you know, even really another all-star. I mean, you mentioned Boobie Gibson and a couple of names and players earlier, but they did a horrible job. And as far as the decision, it's just what it stated, a decision. It was a business decision that was, you know, for him and his family. At that point, he really didn't owe Cleveland anything. He wanted to chase a championship. It's all business. They didn't put the pieces around him, so he left. And look what happened to Cleveland when he left. They actually got a couple of number one picks or whatever. They got a Kyrie Irving. And, you know, they traded for a couple of pieces. You know, he came back, and, you know, within 2 years, you got a championship. So, I mean, sometimes let's just give him the benefit of the doubt, because LeBron knew what he was doing the whole time. And I didn't like – this is for the city. I didn't really like the Dan Gilbert, how he came after LeBron as far as that whole decision thing. And I think he had way too much press these last couple of days. This is for the city of Cleveland. And LeBron knew what he was doing. And all his haters, you know what you can do. You know what I mean? So right now he's very likely number two after Mike. But I'll just hang up and listen to what you got to say. But all you haters, you know what you can do with yourselves. All right, peace.
All right. Yeah. He has a point. I mean, there's a lot of haters out there. And one of the biggest haters I've seen in my life that just seems to find something on LeBron. And he even did it on his way out the door is my man Skip Bayless. I mean, he just picks about everything with LeBron. And it really doesn't make any sense. As far as Mount Rushmore, he's definitely on the route Mount Rushmore, but I can't put him behind Mike. Not yet. Not yet. Maybe in the next couple of years. But to me, Jordan's going to stand alone. And it's kind of tough coming from my mouth because I don't like Michael Jordan. But, you know, hey, he was the greatest. I mean, I can't take that from him, regardless if I like him a lot. Not. But as far as this breakdown of the Cavs game 7, I mean, LeBron James, the guy played amazing. In his last three games, he had a total of 189 points. You know, game 5, 41. Game 6, 41. Game 7, he finished with a triple-double. Who does that? I mean, his shooting percentage wasn't that great. He was 9-24 from the field. But still, 27 points, 11 rebounds, 11 assists, and 3 blocks. And one crucial block that might have saved the game. I mean, it's funny because Steph Curry and Iguodala, they ran that 2-on-1 fast break. And it's like Iguodala just forgot that LeBron James is on the court, known for running down players and blocking their shot. And that's what he did at one of the most vital moments in the game. So that man, you know, people need to celebrate that man on this day. He's a true champion. And like I said, nobody should have anything negative to say about LeBron James anymore. I mean, out of the 7 appearances in the finals, he's 3-4. And that's a hell of a lot better than 2-5 if he would have lost. So LeBron's legacy is cemented. I mean, he's going to be a hero for life in the town of Cleveland, in that state. Because, I mean, like I said, that's his grassroots. He went to Miami, you know, like Gary said, the decision, you know, that was a financial thing. You know, he's more looking out for his family. But at the same time, like I said, he never forgot about Cleveland. He never forgot about it. And that's why, you know, he made that big deal about I'm coming home. And, you know, he was serious. That's why the man shed tears on the court the other night. Because he know how much it meant to him and how much it would mean to them fans to bring them a championship, because they've been suffering. He's been suffering right along with them because he lives in Cleveland. So he's seen all that. Kyrie Irving, he finished with 26 points and 6 rebounds. Very good game. Good shooting. And LeBron and Kyrie hit the 3. Now he has the shot. Instead of Craig Elo, you know, Michael Jordan hitting the shot over Craig Elo, and all the Cleveland, you know, fans know that is the shot. Now Kyrie has the shot. So the shot 2.0, if you want to call it that. Kyrie hit the big 3 that basically iced the game. It was like a 4-minute stretch when both teams, neither team wanted to win the game, it seemed like to me, because both teams were missing shots. And Kyrie was clutch. He hit it and basically delivered that city a championship along with LeBron James and along with the rest of the crew. J.R. Smith, he surprised me this finals. Throwing alley-oop passes, showing different facets of his game that I knew that he'd been able to do. Because when he came in the league, J.R. Smith was always a slasher. He would dunk on you. He's a driver slasher. Then as the years went on, he just started depending on that 3-point shot, and that's all he was doing, just shooting threes. But in this series, he actually threw alley-oop passes and was playmaking, driving the lane, kicking out. I mean, he was doing everything. He finished with 12 points on 2 of 8 three-pointers. So he wasn't really special with his specialty in Game 7. But, hey, he helped in other ways. Tristan Thompson, blue-collar stuff, his lunch pail stuff. He had 9 points, played tough physical defense. I mean, that's all you need. He out there in one-on-one ISO situations guarding Steph Curry and doing a pretty decent job. Other than the 35, 40-foot three that Steph hit, but, I mean, he hits those every once in a while. And the biggest disappointment of the series, but, hey, I'm going to give him credit for Game 1 where he had 17, and I'm going to give him credit for Game 7. Kevin Love played in that last game. I mean, it wasn't his typical numbers he had when he used to be the star of Minnesota. You know, it wasn't 25 and 12 or 14, but he had 9 points. He had 14 rebounds. He had 3 assists. His best game of the finals. So I give Kevin Love some credit. He had a pretty good Game 7. So I think that, you know, they had a good series. They had a good series. And what it all boils down to is that they showed they wanted it more than Golden State. By winning those three straight games the way they did, they wanted it more than Golden State. You know, I mean, you have a lot of people saying that if Draymond Green, when he got suspended, they would have closed him out. Honestly, I believe that. I believe that if Draymond, when he got suspended, this wouldn't have happened. But, hey, things happen. Last year, Cleveland didn't play with Kyrie. They had Kyrie in Game 1 where he dropped 30 on Steph then. They lost him after Game 1. Kevin Love didn't play at all in the series last year. So you can't make excuses.
If you have a strong passion for sports and a love of talking about sports, then hit up Sports Chat with T. Wash at 1516-453-9117. Here we'll discuss the NBA, we'll discuss MLB, we'll discuss NCAA, we'll discuss NFL, we'll discuss MMA, and yes, we'll discuss even a little hockey. So, if you love to talk about sports, and you want to have some good conversation, once again, hit up Sports Chat with T. Wash. And that number is 1-516-453-9117. Looking forward to hearing from you.
Oh yeah, I got the perfect song for the kids to sing. And all my people that's drug dealing just to get by, stack your money till it gets high. We weren't supposed to make it past 25. Jokes on you, we still alive. Throw your hands up in the sky and say, if this is your first time hearing this, you are about to experience something so cold, man. We never had nothing handed, took nothing for granted, took nothing from no man. Man, I'm my own man, but as a shorty, I looked up to the dope, man. Only a dope, man, I knew that wasn't.
Yeah, welcome back to Sports Chat with T-Wash. We're going to continue with these finals. I'm about to talk about Golden State now. If you want to call and chime in on these topics, then hit me up at 1-516-453-9117. Once again, that's 1-516-453-9117. If you want to talk about these finals, if you want to talk about anything, talk about baseball, we can talk about football, even though football season's not here yet. I can't wait for it to get here. It's going to get real interesting then. But if you want to talk some sports, then hit me up. Hit up Sports Chat with T-Wash so we can talk about it. Now, let's get back to the Golden State. Golden State's performance in Game 7. Oh, my goodness. It's one bright spot. Everybody else really wasn't that good. But let's start with the Splash Brothers, a.k.a. the Bricklayers. And they were the Bricklayers for Game 7. I mean, you had Steph Curry, the unanimous MVP. You know, I believe he was the MVP this year. Crucial game of all. The game where it's money time. We need you to play like the MVP. MVP. He had 17 points on 6 of 19 shooting, 4 for 14 from the three-point line, 2 assists, and 4 turnovers. And the 4 turnovers were like the dumbest turnovers I've ever seen. It's like he was literally throwing the game away. I mean, these turnovers were at crucial moments. I mean, how do you throw a behind-the-back pass towards the sideline? To Klay Thompson. It's not like Klay Thompson was sitting in the corner spotting up waiting for it. Klay Thompson was still moving. And then the one where he drove the lane and threw it right to J.R. Smith. It's like, come on, man, what are you doing? And see, that's your point guard not supposed to play like that. Your point guard is supposed to have more than 2 assists ball game, you know, do or die game. He had 2 assists, man. And like I said, 6 of 19 shooting. This is one of the worst performances I've seen Steph Curry have at money time. You know, I don't know. You know, they say his knee might be hurt. I mean, we'll find out here pretty soon if he's going to have surgery. And if he does, then we know something was wrong with his knee. But I've been saying the whole series, he doesn't look right. His shot didn't look right. It seemed like he didn't have the right amount of leg lift in his shot. But all in all, he's played a horrible series. That's not the series you expect the unanimous MVP to have. Now let's get on his Splash Brother or Bricklayer Brother. In the last two games, has been horrible. Game 6 and Game 7, he didn't perform. He had 14 points on 6 of 17 field goals. That's not good. 2 of 10 for 3. And some of the threes he took, I mean, he literally just caught it and threw it up. And they just weren't falling. And I just believe in if your three ball's not going, if your jump shot's not going, you need to start getting to the hole. Drive the lane. Hit a couple layups. Get fouled. Go to the line. Knock down a couple free throws. Maybe that'll get your shot going. But it's like Klay, he just kept shooting threes. It seemed like he really didn't drive it to the basket that much. I might have seen him go to the basket a couple of times. But other than that, he's just shooting threes. And this is not the performance you're going to – not a winning performance from your all-star backcourt. I mean, they have to do better than that. The one bright spot for Golden State was my man Draymond Green, who I talked about in my last show. I said that game seven, he's going to show out. He's going to go balls to the wall because he don't have anything to lose. Game seven, he could talk all the trash he want. He can, you know, cuss at LeBron all he want. He could be physical. He could be his old self. He could play with energy. Because the worst that could happen is that he would get suspended for game one of next season. So I knew Draymond was going to come out and go balls to the wall, and he did. He's the only one who showed up. 32 points on 6 of 8 from three-point range, 15 rebounds, and 9 assists. That's a damn shame that your power forward, undersized power forward, had 9 assists, and your point guard, your unanimous MVP point guard, had 2 assists. That's supposed to be flip-flopped. The unanimous MVP point guard should have the 9 assists, not your power forward, even though your power forward has an all-around game. But that man almost had a triple-double, so he came out the ball. And like I said, I predicted it. I knew he was going to play like that. I knew it. I mean, why not? It's game seven. Be yourself. The worst that could happen is that they suspend you for game one of next season. Now, I want to get to this guy, who I'm pretty sure is not going to be in Golden State next season. Mr. Harrison Barnes, he continued to struggle. I talked about him in the last game. Harrison Barnes had 10 points. And do you guys realize he finished the final three games of the NBA Finals shooting 5 of 32 from the field? And this is supposed to be a contract season for you, bruh. There's no way somebody going to give you max dollars off of this performance in the Finals. And I'm pretty sure Golden State is going to let him go. What's going on in the sports chat with your boy T. Wash? Who's calling?
Hey, this is Leonard.
What's going on, Leonard?
Hey, what's going on? First time caller. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Curry. I think he got a little exposed in this series. I think Cleveland bodied him up. And, you know, Steph, he's a pretty boy. He's playing a little pretty ball out there. I think Cleveland blue-collar players, and, you know, they start bodying him up and touching him up a little bit, and they threw him off his game. And I think that he had to work hard guarding Kyrie, and I think that also played a big part in it. And also, you got to give credit, I think, to Tyronn Lue. I think he was the mastermind. He kind of out-coached Steve Kerr a little bit in these finals. So I just want to hear you talk about that. Thanks.
All right, Leonard. You know, Leonard has a point. Steph Curry, they chipped him, they grabbed him, they hugged him, they did whatever they could to disrupt his flow. You know, he wasn't running those, clean screens. He was getting touched up by everybody. And that was a good strategy by Tyronn Lue. And Tyronn Lue, being a rookie coach, he definitely did out-coach Steve Kerr, who won Coach of the Year, by the way, only after coaching half a season, which I really don't understand. They should have gave that to his assistant coach, Luke Walton. He should have won that Coach of the Year. But they gave it to him. And he was clearly out-coached. And I'm going to touch on that because the Warriors had a bright spot off the bench by the name of Leandro Barbosa. And I just don't understand why he didn't get any playing time, no significant playing time. Like I said in my last show, I would have started him in Game 7. But they went with Festus Ezeli, who gave them 0 points, one rebound, and had the most pathetic performance I've ever seen for a big man. They started him. I would have started Leandro Barbosa. Leandro Barbosa gave them energy. He gave them points off the bench. He was consistent. But they didn't go to him. So I really don't understand that. Now, that's a Steve Kerr issue. He didn't make the proper adjustments needed. Iguodala, I'm not going to fault him because he playing on a bad back. He injured his back in game 6. Toughed it out in that game. You could clearly tell that something was wrong with him. And he tried to tough it out in game 7. He played. He had 4 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists. But he wasn't his normal athletic self. He couldn't really stay in front of LeBron like he normally do. He couldn't really play no good defense because he was injured. So I'm really not going to say anything bad about Iguodala. He's a Warrior because he went out there with a bad back and gave it all he got. But Steve Kerr, you know, Steve Kerr and Steph, to me, they're like the main culprits in how they lost. Because, like I said, Steph is the point guard. Steve Kerr is the coach. Why he didn't have Steph, real Steph in, and have him start passing the ball? It happened in two situations. Game five, Klay Thompson was on fire. He finished the game with 37 points. He had 34 points through three quarters. He only scored 3 points in the fourth quarter. They went away from him, but he was odd in. They might have won that game. And the same thing happened in game seven with Draymond Green. Draymond Green had the hot hand. He had it going. He hit 6 of 8 for three-point range. He's going to the basket. He was doing everything. But in the fourth quarter, they just mysteriously go away from him. And to me, that's the responsibility of the coach and the point guard. Like I said, Steph, he had horrible turnovers. He rushed his shots. Klay Thompson rushed his shots. Steve Kerr, he just, like I said, he didn't play Barbosa enough. Barbosa didn't get a lot of time in game seven. So I'm really not understanding. You know, he's going to have to, you know, figure out some kind of strategy going into next season. But changes that I'm thinking that some off-season changes for the Cavs. As far as the Cavs, word came out today that LeBron James is going to stay. So I don't see them making too many changes besides Kevin Love. I think Kevin Love is going to get traded. It might happen tomorrow night during the NBA draft because, for whatever reason, there's been a lot of movement today. A lot of movement. Derrick Rose got traded to the Knicks for Robert Lopez, Jose Calderon, and Jerry and Grant. So the Bulls don't have to worry about Derrick Rose anymore because, to me, in my opinion, Derrick Rose has just been sitting in Chicago just getting paid, not even playing. So the Bulls finally was able to get rid of that big contract, sent him to the Knicks. Well, he had 1 year left on his contract. And also, Jeff Teague has got traded to the Pacers, has been traded to the Pacers from the Atlanta Hawks. George Hill is going to Utah, and the Hawks get Utah's number 12 pick. I think it's going to be a good pickup for the Pacers because for years they've been needing a point guard, and now they finally have an all-star caliber point guard who happens to be from Indianapolis. You know, George Hill is from Indianapolis, so they basically just swapped out hometown kids. Jeff T is going to be here running the show for the Pacers. So I'm assuming their big three is going to be him, Miles Turner, and Paul George. I think they need some bench depth, though. They need to get some bench depth. If they get some help on the bench, then the Pacers might be able to be in business. But we'll see. But like I was saying, the Cavs need to trade Kevin Love. I'm thinking it may be to Boston. They're saying Boston interested in him. I know they were before at the trade deadline. But they said that Cleveland wanted too much for him. So who knows? Maybe they could do it now. Cleveland is going to need a two-guard because J.R. Smith opted out. Unless he changes his mind and stays, they're going to need a two-guard, a starting two-guard. And I was just thinking, you know, what if Dwayne Wade decide to repay LeBron a favor, you know? Would Dwayne Wade decide to come up to Cleveland and be the two guard with LeBron James like he did when he went down to South Beach? How crazy would that be? But you just never know. You never know. So the Cavs probably would need a little bench depth too because Rich Jefferson is supposed to retire, but I don't know. At the Cavaliers parade, he's saying he probably will play one more year, so I don't know. But James Jones, he need to retire. Tay Jones is probably going to be gone. So the Cavs will probably need a little something more on the bench. You know, just somebody that could come in and spare minutes for the starters. Other than that, I don't really see much that the Cavs need to do. Just get rid of Kevin Love's contract, bring in somebody that can help. We'll see. As far as the Warriors, the speculation is that the Warriors are going to go all in for Kevin Durant. I mean, we'll see. Word is that Kevin Durant is saying that it's either going to be Golden State or he's going to stay in Oklahoma City. If he goes to Golden State, I think it'd be that's gonna be ugly, because imagine that lineup: Curry, Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, and Bogut. That's ridiculous. And you know, some people worrying about the shots. I don't think that really matters, because Kevin Durant don't complain about shots now. He plays with Russell Westbrook, one of the biggest ball hawks in the league, even though I like him, you know, and that is my squad that I root for. But I don't think it'll be an issue at all if Kevin Durant decides to go to Golden State. But word is, if they don't get Kevin Durant, they're going to go after Dirk Nowitzki. And I think that'll also be a good pickup, because then you'll be able to move Draymond Green back to his natural position, move him back to the three, have Dirk at the four. Dirk can still shoot. Dirk can still play. Either or will be a good pickup. Durant, to me, that'll take them over the top, and they'll definitely be in the finals again, having a third meeting with the Cavs. They pick up Dirk. Maybe they can make it to the West Finals. You know, all depending on what the Spurs do, how they rebuild their team. So we'll see how it goes. But it's definitely going to be an interesting season. Definitely going to be an interesting season. Welcome back to Sports Chat with T. Wash. If you guys want to call and chime in about these NBA finals, this game seven, about the NBA transactions that's been happening right now today, the Derrick Rose trade, what you think about it? The Jeff Teague to Indiana Pacers trade, what you think about that? If you want to talk about any of these subjects, then hit me up at 1-516-453-9117. 1-516-453-9117. Well, tomorrow night we're going to have an NBA draft, and I usually get my information off of this website called NBADraft.net. They usually do mock drafts, and they're usually pretty accurate. This is usually the draft site I look at every year. At number one, they have the Philadelphia 76ers taking Ben Simmons, who I'm not really much of a fan of. I don't know if he can shoot or not. All I see him do, he can handle the ball. He kind of has like a LeBron James type game. He can handle the ball. He's 6'10". He can play small forward or power forward. He's out of LSU. He can handle the ball. He can rebound. He has a good all-around game. He can pass the ball, but I don't know if he can shoot or not. I swear I've never seen this guy shoot a 15- to 17-foot jump shot. I've seen him shoot free throws. And he's not, you know, he's an average free throw shooter. So I really don't know how good he could be, but everyone's in love with him. So they have the Sixers taking him at number one. If I was him, I wouldn't want to go to the Sixers. But anyway, at number two, they have the Los Angeles Lakers taking Brandon Ingram, 6'9", small forward out of Duke. I like Brandon Ingram. He reminds me of Kevin Durant because he's long, he's skinny, he can shoot. He could drive the ball. He could handle the ball. He reminds me of a young version of a Kevin Durant. So I really like him, and I think he'd be a good fit for the Lakers. I mean, they already have Jordan Clarkson. You know, they in rebuild mode because Kobe's gone now. They have Jordan Clarkson, who's a good guard. I like him. They have D'Angelo Russell. He's pretty good. They have Julius Randle. They got a lot of young talent. They got Larry Nance Jr., who's athletic. I think he'd fit right in with them. And if they're able to get DeMar DeRozan in free agency this summer, that'll make them even better. But you know the Lakers are going to be players. They're going to push hard to try to get Durant too. But I think that my feeling is that DeMar DeRozan is going to go because he said he wants to go home. He's from Compton. And he said it was a dream of his to play for the Lakers. He's a free agent now. So I don't see why he wouldn't try to go home. But I just have a feeling that next year the Lakers are going to do big things. I think Russell Westbrook's going to go home. I think he's going to go play for the Lakers next year. I just got a feeling. I don't know. I'm not an expert. I don't know, but I just got a feeling. And I'm thinking that's probably isn't making a clear-cut decision that he's going to stay in Oklahoma City. He probably knows something that we don't know. He probably knows that Russ is going to leave next year. So if Russ leaves next year, why would he sign a long-term deal? At number three, the Boston Celtics. They have them taking Chris Dunn, 6'4 guard out of Providence. I like him a lot. He plays both ends of the ball. He plays defense. He plays offense. He won the Big East Player of the Year defensively and offensively. So the boy's pretty bad. But I don't think that he's going to go to Boston because I think Boston's going to trade that pick. Danny Ainge is notorious for trading his picks away on draft night. So I'm expecting the same thing. I mean, who knows? Maybe he might trade this pick and, you know, a couple other pieces to Cleveland for Kevin Love. Tune in tomorrow night and we'll find out. But there's been movement today already with the trade of Derrick Rose and the trade of Jeff Teague. That's telling me that we're going to have an interesting draft tomorrow. It might be a lot of movement, a lot of player movement. At four, they have the Phoenix Suns taking Jaylen Brown, 6'6 shooting guard / small forward out of California. I don't know much about him. I just know he's athletic. In the highlights I saw, he's an athletic kid. He plays with a lot of heart, a lot of fire. He's a freshman. He's a McDonald's All-American. That's pretty much all I know about him. At number five, they had the Minnesota Timberwolves taking Buddy Hield. 6'5 shooting guard out of Oklahoma, National Player of the Year. He could shoot. That's really about all I know about Buddy Hield. When I've seen him play, I've seen him shoot. I've never really seen him, like, drive to the basket or do anything else fundamentally. You know, I don't know if he could good. I don't know if he could rebound. I have no idea. But they have the Timberwolves taking him. And I don't know if they should because they already guard heavy. At number six, the New Orleans Pelicans, they're taking Jamal Murray out of Kentucky. 6'4 shooting guard. He's real good. I like him. Good player. I think he'd do good things for Pelicans because we don't know how much left Eric Gordon has in the tank. They might release Eric Gordon. What's going on? This Sports Chat with your boy T-Wash. Who's calling?
How's it going? It's Tom.
Hey, how you doing, Tom? What's going on?
Not too much. I just tuned in, so I would just assume you're talking about the draft, but if you give me what you're talking about, I can probably chime in if you got any questions.
Yeah. What you got?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Lakers fan, so this is my NBA finals here. But
okay.
What are your thoughts on the draft so far? What are your thoughts?
Well, okay, the player that I think that's going to be a steal, and he reminds me of Draymond Green. He went to the same school. I think people are sleeping on Denzel Valentine. Denzel Valentine played underneath Draymond Green. He plays just like him. He has an all-around game. He can pass the ball. He can shoot. He can score. He's a leader. He's just like Draymond Green. And I really think that because right now in this mock draft, they have Draymond Green at number 18 going to the Detroit Pistons, which would be a great fit for them. I mean, they've seen him a lot being in the same state. But I think Denzel Valentine should be a top 10 pick. So to me, he's going to be the steal of the draft. And like I was saying, Ben Simmons at number one, I'm not sold on him because I don't know if he can shoot or not. I like Brandon Ingram because he reminds me of Kevin Durant, and I think he has a good all-around game. Chris Dunn, like I said, I don't expect that pick to be there. I'm expecting Boston to trade it. So all in all, this draft is pretty weak. I think we have a weak draft. You know, there's a couple players that might be able to stand out and make an impact on their team. But I definitely think Denzel Valentine, wherever he goes, he's going to make an impact.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say on this draft is I think you're pretty spot on. I think that I think the first and the second picks, you have a, you know, I know a lot of people are not sold on Simmons, and they are hyper-focusing on the fact that he can't shoot, but uh-huh. his athletic gifts are so extreme. It comes down more to a work ethic thing, right? Like, if the guy is willing to work hard and become better, I think that Ben Simmons has the chance to be a much more athletic and much more skilled Draymond Green, right? I think people are viewing him too much as a point guard and not viewing enough the fact that what his skills are. He's by far and away has the highest upside in this draft. I think his uh-huh. ceiling is – I mean, I think his floor is not super low, but I think the shooting thing is scary and it should scare yeah. teams, but – he's so versatile that, you know, the guy could eventually, who knows what the NBA looks like in 3 years, the guy could be playing center for your team. And there's just, if you looked at the Cavs in the finals, I mean, there was just such a massive advantage to having, and LeBron is a once in a generation, maybe even more than a generation. He's once in a 30-year player besides yeah. Jordan, right? I mean, but like the ability to have him play power forward, you know, mm-hmm. and basically be your primary ball, like a ball handler, just allows him to yeah. be so versatile. And I think Simmons is not LeBron, but he's not insanely far off. I think
they're comparing him to him.
You have to take him. I think yeah, you have yeah. to take him, especially if you're the Sixers. Ingram, you know, as a Laker fan, what I'm the most excited about, I think, is there's been a lot played up over the last few years of how big markets don't matter anymore. I don't necessarily mm-hmm. believe that to be true. And so, and here's really the main difference on why I think that, right? So if you look at, you know, let's say you're the New Orleans Pelicans or you're the Charlotte Hornets or you're the Phoenix Suns, right? Like, you need the players that you take in the draft to be superstars. You need them to be superstars because yeah. the odds of you luring a big-time, big-name free agent to sign with your team is low.
Yeah, slim and
the nine. Lakers are different in the sense that Brandon Ingram doesn't have to be a superstar. D'Angelo Russell doesn't have to be a superstar. Julius Randle doesn't have to be a superstar. And Jordan Clarkson doesn't have to be a superstar. If those mm-hmm. guys can be good NBA players and add up over the next year to only $20-25 million a season, which is what it's going to be, and the Lakers have now a nice young core of players that can go out and spend $85 million on free agents, that's a game changer for them. So Ingram, I like because I don't know if I believe he has superstar upside, but I think he's going to defend well, he's going to shoot
yes.
well, and he has
yes.
the potential to be not so. I don't think he's Durant. I think Durant is on a different level athletically than him, but he is 18. I think he has the potential to be more of a Giannis Antetokounmpo with a jump shot, which is
you think
nothing.
He could be the Greek Freak? Now see, the Greek Freak is athletic though. I don't know if he's as athletic as the Greek Freak.
But if you look at scouting reports for the Greek Freak, is
uh-huh.
that the reason that he fell to the 17th pick is that his scouting reports said he had no athleticism. Like, he just wasn't an athlete. And then all of
wow.
a sudden, because he was 18, and then all
mm-hmm.
of a sudden between 19 and 20, he developed more athleticism, because when you're 18, that's not the peak of your athleticism. Ingram is only 18 still. He will still be 18 when the NBA
yeah.
season starts. So,
yeah.
you know, I think that's more of a comparison to him, and if you have the Greek Freak with a jump shot, I mean, that's a
yes.
fantastic
player. That's a nasty combination, Tom.
The big issue here, right, and I think what you've touched on, is that if you have the third, what's the real difference in this draft between the third and the eighth pick? Or I mean, like, I'd be just as happy getting, I mean, Buddy Hield at 7 as I would be getting Dragon Bender or Jamal Murray at 3 or Jaylen mm-hmm. Brown at 4. I mean, like, basically all these guys are blending into one player. It's a total roll of the dice. This is not the year to have the third pick, right? So
yeah.
I think
yeah, that's
that
why I think Boston's going to trade it.
But what is the value on it, right? Like, I think all other teams realize that, too. Like, if I'm – honestly, the team that's in the nicest spot to me is just, like, the Pelicans. Like, I like where the Pelicans sit. Let everyone else draft everyone out, and you just take whoever's left over of Murray, Hill, Bender, and Dunn. And then I think Jaylen Brown might go somewhere in there. Who knows? But I think the real value of this draft falls in that, like, 14 to 24 range. Hell, I mean, it might even fall anywhere between 14 and 35. Because I think in reality, you probably have just as good of a chance to get a good player at 32 as you do at 15 here. So
I agree. That's the kind of draft it is. Well, Tom, let me ask you a question. Since you're a Laker fan, how do you feel about coming back home?
I don't like it.
You don't like DeMar DeRozan?
It's not that I don't like a DeRozan. It's that it's not like baseball, right? In baseball, like, you could sign DeMar DeRozan to a $40 million a year contract, and then you could go sign someone else to an 80 million. But the problem with the NBA is that DeMar DeRozan is going to make just as much money as Russell Westbrook or as Kevin Durant or as LeBron James or Blake Griffin. The reason I don't love DeRozan is that DeRozan, you know, for better or worse, 3 years ago, Dwight Howard left the team. And at the time, I thought it was a disaster. But looking back on it, if you ask me, would I trade Dwight Howard right now for Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell, and Julius Randle, I'd laugh and do the trade within half a second, right? So what it did, though, is that we now have this young core, and if we need to build on that timeline. My worry with DeRozan is that the way he plays will impact the development of that young core. He's a player that needs the ball in his hands a lot. He can't really play off the ball. He's good in the pick and roll, which is nice, but defensively he's terrible. Offensively, I have a lot of questions on how he's going to age because he doesn't really have a jump shot. And the second his athleticism starts to go, he doesn't have a three-point jump shot.
No, not a three-point, but mid-range, he's money. I say I got to disagree with you on the jump shot.
Yeah.
He can shoot mid-range shots, and he could create his own shot. You know, DeMar DeRozan, he breaks down defenders. He goes to the basket.
What I'm saying is, I don't know if I want a player like that right now. I don't think it works with the development, right? You have Ingram, who I'd want to have the ball. You have Randle, who needs the ball. You have Russell, who needs the ball. And then to bring in DeRozan, a player who I don't think is going to tip the needle for the Lakers. The only player that really interests me this offseason, like in terms of max salary, is I've sold myself in on a Whiteside. I could convince myself on Whiteside. I think that he fits.
You think he'd be a difference maker?
Better. Yeah, I do. I mean, I think there's a lot of question marks with him, but I think he fits a lot better with the team that they have. Because would I rather have DeMar DeRozan at $25 million or just start Jordan Clarkson at $5 million a year, right? Like, Jordan Clarkson is 70% of the player of DeMar DeRozan, and he's going to be, 80% less money. I'd rather spend that money on a center, or honestly, I'd rather just sign a bunch of one-year guys, because I think 2016 was built up as a big free agent year because of Durant and whatnot. I don't think Durant's going anywhere. I think he signs a one-year deal. And I think 2017 is the real year that you're going to talk about free agency, because you got Blake Griffin, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and then even you have these secondary dudes like Gordon Hayward and Millsap. It's a loaded free agent class. And if I'm the Lakers, I'd rather just roll that money over.
Just wait
for
the next year.
Player.
Yeah.
I think he's a good player, but I don't know if he. I just don't think he like. Let's say they spent all their money and they signed DeMar DeRozan and Hassan Whiteside, and they're still going to lose in the first round of the playoffs. Maybe they make it to the second round of the playoffs, but like, or they don't. I mean, I'm not convinced it makes them very good. So if you can't. You're about to spend $50 or $60 million, and you can't even be convinced that makes you a playoff team. Then I think you got to think about it.
I agree. Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. And as far as this draft, it is a weak draft. Like I said, I'm hatching my wheel with Denzel Valentine. I really like him, and I think he'll be a perfect fit for somebody. And I said, I like Brandon Ingram too. I like him too, and I think he has an upside. Who knows? Maybe you might be right. Maybe they might have scouted him wrong. Like you said, they scouted the Greek Freak and say he wasn't athletic, but that's all you see now is athleticism when you watch the Bucks play.
I'll tell you what though, if Dunn ends up where I think he is, which is the Timberwolves, man, that team starts to look pretty good. I mean, there's no real superstars. I don't think like after maybe one or two, but like Dunn is very legit. That team with Dunn, Wiggins, Towns, I mean, and a ton of assets to trade. That starts to look not quite OKC, but OKCF when they pulled off the Harden, Westbrook, Durant. I don't think any of those guys are on that level. Well, actually, Towns might be on that level, but I really don't think Wiggins gets there. But that's a nice team.
Oh, I believe they're going to make a push for the playoffs next year. They're going to be fighting for that last spot because, I mean, you know, Thibodeau's going to have them playing defense, something that they never do. And Rubio, you know, a lot of people don't like Rubio. I like Rubio. Rubio passes the ball good. I mean, he can give you a couple buckets here and there. He's a good floor general. And if they put – well, see, that's the thing, too. You know, Chris Dunn, he's really a point guard. So what would they – they would move him to the two. Maybe they would move him to the two. And they're going to have to get rid of Zach LaVine because, to me, Zach LaVine is
there. I think a LaVine makes a lot of sense as a two guard, more sense than he makes as a point guard, because I don't think he's a very good passer. I think Rubio probably would have to go if they do get done. I love Rubio. I think that the issue with Rubio is just that his skill set, the game, it's not passing him by any means, but like he's starting to look very Rajon Rondo-esque in terms of like the not being able to shoot is a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big deal. Like it's like Rondo's got everything else, but the fact that he can't shoot. He's scared to take a jump shot. Look at him. Like he can't, he's just players play. You know, the pick and roll becomes easier to defend if the point guard has no threat to make a jump shot. So, you go under it every time. Who cares? Just guard the roll man. Don't guard the point guard. Force him to take a 20-foot jumper. Like, that's what's happened with Rondo. He's still so good and athletic that he puts up stats. But, his days of being elite passed him by once the league move more towards jump shooting. I gotta hop off quick, but what's your thought on the Rose trade?
I think it was time. It was time to get him out of Chicago because you know him and Jimmy Butler, they had issues, and I mean, you just want to be real about it. It was Jimmy Butler's team. It got to that point where it was Jimmy Butler's team. It was time for Derrick Rose to go. I mean, he just stays injured all the time. Bulls paying him all his money. It was time to get rid of that contract. I don't know how he's going to perform in New York with Carmelo because word is that when the Bulls were trying to get Carmelo, Derrick Rose had an issue with it. You know, so I don't know how him and Carmelo is going to perform together in New York. I mean, we need to see if he's going to be able to play. That's the thing with Derrick Rose. He's a mystery. We don't know how many games he's going to give you. We don't know what he's going to do. So I just felt like it was time.
Yeah.
It was time for the Bulls to make that deal.
Yeah, my general feeling on it is that it's fun, right? Like, I don't think it does anything for anyone. I think Derrick Rose's best years are probably gone, but, like, what did the Knicks give up? They gave up Lopez, who's, like, a pretty good contract. They gave up Jarius Grant, who, like, randomly is already 25. I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
And Calderon is whatever. So it's like, I mean, it's fun. I mean, like, it'll be fun to see Rose on the Knicks. I hope he does good. I think maybe he can still salvage something. Who knows? You know, I mean, I really hope it works out because I really like Rose. I think he's gotten a raw deal and maybe it works out. I mean, at the very least, like, when's the last time you could look at a Knicks team and actually say, like, oh, that's kind of exciting? Long time.
I know.
So,
I do like Kristaps Porzingis though. He's the only bright spot to me. I do like him.
Porzingis is sweet. Melo is still sweet. I still think though that like what they're doing is kind of why I don't want DeRozan to be on the Lakers. So like the Knicks are working now with two completely different timelines, right? Like Porzingis is what, 19 years old. And then they have Melo, and Melo's still amazing, but, like, let's be honest, they're not winning a title anytime soon unless LeBron and Kevin Durant decide they want to sign there. So
they
like
need a whole lot of work.
So like it makes I would love to see Melo on a good team for once. Just a team where like I'd love to see a love for Melo trade. I want to see Melo on a good team.
Yeah.
I want it like he is going. I don't want him to go down as he's underrated. He's very underrated. He's so good. Like it's just he's not really the kind of
Tom,
player that by himself is going to lift a team.
Tom, this is so funny because I know people that don't like Carmelo Anthony, but I do, and they get on me because I do. I mean, don't get me wrong. The only thing I don't like that I don't like about Carmelo is that he just score. He don't rebound really. You know, he really don't play that good a defense. But other than that, I love Carmelo Anthony, man. I'm with you. And I would like to see him go somewhere where he can win. And, you know, him and LeBron always want to play together. So who knows? Maybe
right.
They can, because I do believe Kevin Love is gone. They just got to figure out who's going to take that contract. And you just never know, man.
Yeah.
Maybe LeBron could right. – and I'm saying LeBron because he's the general manager. Maybe LeBron could swing some kind of deal with Phil Jackson and get his boy there. I mean, we'll see, though.
Well, I mean, my entire thing has always been like, look, if you're going to compare – Melo has always been unfairly compared to his draft class, right? So, like, if you want to compare Melo to LeBron James or Dwayne Wade, then, yeah, I mean, I think Dwayne Wade and LeBron James have had better careers than Melo, but – Dwayne Wade is one of the best shooting guards of all time, and Melo is – I mean, and LeBron is probably at this point one of the top five players of all time. So, yeah, if you're going to compare him and say, oh, he didn't do as well as those guys, well, guess what? Not a lot of people have done as well as those guys.
Yeah.
Melo has been unfairly characterized as someone that should be lifting his team to the next level. He isn't that. I think he is. You're not going to throw him on the – you're not going to throw him on the Sacramento Kings and they all of a sudden become amazing or something, right? Like – he needs good players around him, but
yeah,
I would love to see him as the second best player on a team because I think he could excel. I mean, like, I know he could excel in that, and he's not – who's the second best player he ever played with? A washed-up Allen Iverson and then a washed-up Amari Stoudemire. Those have been his best teammates. Like, I'd love to see him with, like, players actually in their prime because I think what he does best would actually shine through.
Yeah.
But I got to hop
agree.
Off, but enjoyed this. I'll definitely call back.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Come on.
Have a good one. All right, yeah, that was a pretty long conversation with Tom, man, but he had some good stuff to talk about. That's what I'm talking about. See, if you guys want to call, 1-516-453-9117. 1-516-453-9117. Give me a call so we can talk some sports. We've got 21 minutes left. Let me get back to this draft. I left off before Tom called me. I left off with the Pelicans selecting Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray has skills, and I think he'd be a good fit with the Pelicans. He can score. He plays tough-minded defense. And I think he's going to turn out to be a good pro. And at number seven, they have the Nuggets taking Dragan Bender. I don't know much about him at all. I just know he's a 7-foot Croatian, which tells me that he's going to shoot jump shots. Because most of the European guys, they shoot. They're just shooters. They really don't do much else. But him being 7 foot, maybe he'll get you some rebounds or something, but I'm assuming he's a 3-point shooter or he just shoots jump shots. I have no idea. And like I said, I don't know much about him. And number eight, they have the Sacramento Kings taking Domantas Sabonis. Now, I know him because I knew his dad. His dad was one of the greats, Arvydas Sabonis. I mean, unfortunately, we saw him at the tail end of his career in the NBA. He played for the Portland Trail Blazers. But Arvydas Sabonis was one of the greatest players in the world ever in Lithuania. Arvydas Sabonis was a 7-footer who could shoot threes, play inside. It didn't matter. Arvydas Sabonis was one of the greatest scorers in the history of basketball. And his son, he plays at Gonzaga. He's 6'10". He's nothing like his dad. He's more of a banger, a rebounder, you know, a grinder. He can't shoot or anything like that. He's not like his father, which, you know, really tells me I don't understand why he's in the top 10 of this mock draft, but he is. At number nine, they have the Toronto Raptors taking Marquese Chriss, power forward out of Washington, 6'10". I don't know much about him because I wasn't able to watch a lot of Pac-10 basketball. Maybe Tom probably would know him more than I do. But I don't know much about him. I don't know if he's good or not. I just know he's a McDonald All-American, which tells me that he's one of the best high school players in the country. At number 10, they have the Milwaukee Bucks taking Deontay Davis, 6'10 power forward out of Michigan State. Now, I did watch a lot of Big Ten ball because I'm a Big Ten guy. But when this kid got in the game, I didn't see him do much. I mean, he might have blocked a few shots or something like that. But I didn't see nothing dynamic with his game that warrants him to be a top 10 pick. But they have the Milwaukee Bucks taking Deontay Davis. I mean, like I said, I don't know much about him. When I did see him get in the games, I didn't see him do much. Some of the other notable picks, like I was saying, they have the Detroit Pistons taking Denzel Valentine at number 18. 6'5", shooting guard, small forward, Michigan State. And like I said, I truly believe he's going to be the steal of the draft because he was National Player of the Year before he got hurt. Once he got hurt, that's when Buddy Hield basically took it and ran with it. But if Denzel Valentine wouldn't have got hurt during the season, he would have won the National Player of the Year in college. But they had the Pistons taking him, and I think he'll be a perfect fit for the Pistons. I mean, like I said, I think he'll be perfect anywhere he goes, as long as he gets the playing time, because he could do it all. At 25, they had the Clippers taking Bryce Johnson, 6'10", power forward out of North Carolina. Athletic, long, could play above the rim, rebound, block shots. He's kind of a do-it-all type of player. And they have the Clippers taking him. I mean, what is that saying? Is that saying that they're going to trade Blake Griffin? I don't know. Like I said, it's going to be interesting tomorrow night. I haven't watched the draft in years because it's just not the same to me anymore. But I'm going to watch this draft because I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of player movement tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of trades and things like that. So who knows? Maybe this mock draft pick of the Clippers taking Bryce Johnson mean that Blake Griffin going to get traded. At number 32, they had the Lakers taking Diamond Stone, 6'10 center out of Maryland. And I think he would be a good fit because he brings size to the Lakers. He could play in a post. He has a post game. He has a high motor. He plays with attitude. I think the Lakers need players like that, especially now that they, like I said, Kobe's gone and they're in rebuild mode. So they need to get as much talent as they can on the team. At 44, they have the Atlanta Hawks taking Gary Payton II. Gary Payton's son, he played guard at Oregon State. He's a defender, just like his dad, but he can't score like his dad. He's not the scorer that his dad was. Back when his dad was at Oregon State, Gary Payton averaged like 28, 30 a game. And in the NBA, he was a proven scorer, plus a lockdown defender. Now, Gary Payton II is a lockdown defender. He's one of the best defenders in the offensively. He wasn't that great. At 45, they have the Celtics taking Tyler Ulis, 5'10 point guard out of Kentucky. He was the SEC Player of the Year. Good little point guard. Can score, a leader. But this pick wouldn't make any sense if they take him like this. If they take this pick, it wouldn't make any sense because they already have Isaiah Thomas, who's another miniature point guard. I don't think they need Tyler Ulis. And then they have Terry Rozier, who they drafted out of Louisville last year. They have Marcus Smart. They have Evan Turner. They loaded at the guard position already. So this pick wouldn't make any sense, but this is how NBADraft.net has it. And last pick that I'm going to talk about is number 58, the Celtics. They have the Celtics taking A.J. Hammonds, 7-foot center out of Purdue. And I have to give my Purdue brother some love. I'm a Purdue guy. I root for all my Purdue kids. I hope they make it. And I think A.J. Hammonds would be a good fit for the Celtics because they need size. I mean, they have Tyler Zeller, but he's a little guy. I mean, he's skinny. He's not really big. I think A.J. Hammonds, he's okay in the post. He can use both hands. He can block shots. And he has an NBA body, so I think the Celtics would be good by picking him. Okay, I'm going to do the MLB rundown for yesterday's scores. Yesterday, you had the Colorado Rockies beating the New York Yankees 8-4. You had the San Francisco Giants destroying the Pittsburgh Pirates 15-1. San Diego Padres beat the Baltimore Orioles 10-7. You had the Diamondbacks beating the Toronto Blue Jays 4-2. You had my Atlanta Braves beating the Florida Marlins 3-2. You know, I got to be enthusiastic whenever the Braves win because, you know, we just suck now. Sad to say, but we're not good anymore. So I have to be enthusiastic, you know, when I read the score saying that the Braves won. The Seattle Mariners go down to the Detroit Tigers 4-2. My favorite American League team, the Chicago White Sox, beat the Boston Red Sox 3-1. Hey, it just keeps pouring in for Cleveland, boy. The Cleveland Indians beat the Tampa Bay Rays 6-0. Okay, Cubs fans, hey, now that Cleveland, they ended their curse. Maybe your curse will end. You know, maybe the black cat and the billy goat and all those other curses you guys have will stop. Maybe that'll come to the end for you guys, too, this year. You guys win the World Series. Hey, Boston Red Sox, Theo Epstein led Boston Red Sox out of their curse and got them one, got them two titles. Maybe Theo could do it for you guys again. Cleveland upended their curse. Hey, that's good news, Cub fans. Your curse is over. But you lost last night, 4-3 to the Cardinals. The only other team than the San Francisco Giants that I think that could challenge the Cubs are the Cardinals because they're division rivals. And for whatever reason, no matter what, Cardinals are always there in the end. So I can see the Cardinals and I can see the Giants challenging the Cubs, trying to derail them from getting to the World Series. We got the Cincinnati Reds beating the Texas Rangers 8-2. You had a shootout. The Minnesota Twins beat the Philadelphia Phillies 14-10. You had the California Angels going down to the Houston Astros 3-2. The Oakland Athletics beat the Milwaukee Brewers 5-3. And the LA Dodgers beat the Washington Nationals 3-2. So that's your MLB rundown. Sports history fact of the day. On this day, June 22nd, 1937, the Brown Bomber, Joe Louis, knocks out James J. Braddock in 18 rounds for the heavyweight boxing title. 18 rounds. Wow. That's crazy. When they should scrap, boy. When they scrap back then. 18 rounds. So that's Joe Louis, one of the greatest heavyweights ever. Well, just to wrap things up, like I said, LeBron James, no one needs to get on him anymore. Just leave the man alone. He's an excellent leader. He led his team to the championship by doing something that's never been done in history. He came back from 3-1. Him and his team came back from 3-1 after everything looked bleak. Looked like they were going to go down. Go down in 5, it looked like. And these guys won 3 straight games. And they was able to celebrate on the team that celebrated on their court the previous season. They were able to go beat them on their floor and celebrate on their floor. I mean, that's sweet revenge right there. That's sweet revenge. And congratulations to Cleveland. I'm happy for all the fans there. 52 years of suffering. Those people are going to be celebrating for the next month. Well, at least they're going to be celebrating until October 9th, you know, when I'm in the house at Paul Brown Stadium watching my New England Patriots take down RG3 and the Cleveland Browns. They're going to celebrate until then, you know, because that's my boy Tom Brady's first game back. So I'm expecting Tom Brady and the Patriots to, like, run up the score on them. So they're going to be happy all the way until October 9th. Once October 9th comes, they're going to be sad again because that's going to be Tom Brady's, the beginning of Tom Brady's revenge tour, the payback. And I'm sorry to say it, Cleveland fans, but my New England Patriots are going to destroy you guys on October 9th. And I will be in the house at Paul Brown Stadium to witness it. Other than that, congratulations, Cleveland. Sports is basically the fabric of society, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, soccer, and hockey. We all as humans have a strong passion for the games and what they represent. Now ask yourself, could you imagine life without them? Thank you, everyone. for tuning in to Sports Chat with T-Wash. And I'm going to see you next time.